Elias, in unintended mockery of the foundryman below, wore his black cloak hood pulled close around his face. He went that way always these days, at least when he left his chambers, just as he always wore the scabbarded sword. The gaining of that blade had brought the king power such as few mortals had ever had, but it had not come without a price. The Red Priest was wise enough to know that the reckoning of such bargains was a very subtle science. I cannot sleep, Priorates.
Understandable, my king. There are many burdens on your shoulders.
You help me with many. Have you been seeing to the siege engines?
Priorates nodded, then realized the hooded Elias might not see it in the dark stairwell.
Yes, sire, I would like to roast Inch, that pig of an overseer, over one of his own fires. But we will have them, sire, somehow.
The king was silent for a long while, stroking the hilt of the sword.
Naglimon must be crushed, Elias said at last. Joshua defies me.
He is no longer your brother, sire. He is only your enemy, Priorates said.
No,
Elias said slowly, thinking deeply.
He is my brother. That is why he cannot be allowed to defy me.
That seems obvious to me. Is it not obvious, Priorates?
Of course, your majesty.
The king pulled his cloak tighter around him, as though to keep out a cold wind, but the air that billowed up from below was thick with the heat of the forges.
Have you found my daughter yet, Priorates?
Elias asked, suddenly looking up. The priest could faintly see the eye gleam and shadow of the king's face in the cavern of his hood.
As I told you, sire, if she is not gone to Naban, to her mother's family there, and our spies do not think so, then she is at Naglimund with Joshua.
Miriam Mel. The exhaled name drifted down the stone stairwell.
I must have her back. I must!
The king extended an open hand, slowly closing it into a fist before him.
She is the one piece of good flesh I shall save from the broken shell of my brother's house. The rest I shall tread into dust.
You have the strength now, my king, Priorates said, and you have powerful friends.
Yes,
the High King nodded slowly.
Yes, that is true. And what of the huntsman, Ingen Jäger? He has not found my daughter, but neither has he returned. Where is he?
He still hunts the wizard's boy, Majesty. It has become something of a grudge.
Priorates waved his hand, as though trying to banish the uncomfortable memory of the Black Rimmersman.
A great deal of effort, it seems to me, has been spent trying to find this boy, who you say knows a few of our secrets.
The king frowned and spoke harshly.
I wish as much trouble had been expended on my own flesh and blood. I am not pleased.
For a moment his shadowed eyes glinted angrily. He turned to go, then stopped.
Priorates?
The king's voice had changed again.
Yes, sire.
Do you think I shall sleep better when Naglimund is thrown down and I have my daughter back?
I am sure, my king.
Good. I shall enjoy it even more, knowing that.
Elias slipped away, up the shadowed corridor. Priorates did not move, but listened as the king's retreating footsteps blended with the hammers of Erkinland, whose clangor sounded monotonously in the deeps below. Chapter 34. Forgotten Swords. Vosheva was angry. The brush trembled in her hand, and the red line trailed onto her chin.
See what I have done?
She said, irritation thickening her heavy thrithings accent.
You are cruel to rush me.
She blotted her mouth with a kerchief and began again.
By the Aiden woman, there are more important matters afoot than your lip painting.
Joshua stood up and resumed his pacing.
Do not speak so to me, sir. Do not walk like that behind me.
She waved her hand, searching for words.
To and fro, to and fro. If you must throw me out into the corridor like a camp follower, at least I will first make myself ready.
The prince picked up a fire iron, then stooped to poke at the coals. You are not being thrown into the corridor, my lady.
If I am your lady,
Vosheva scowled,
then why may I not stay? You are ashamed of me.
Because we will speak of things that are not your concern. If you have not noticed, we are preparing for war. I'm sorry if that inconveniences you.
He grunted and stood, laying the poker carefully back against the hearth. Go speak with the other ladies. Be glad you do not have to carry my burdens. Vosheva spun to face him.
The other ladies hate me, she said,
eyes narrowed, a lock of black hair dangling loose across her cheek.
I hear them whispering about Prince Joshua's slut from the grasslands, and I hate them, the northern cows. In my father's marchland, they would be whipped for such...
She struggled with the still unfamiliar tongue.
Such disrespect.
She took a breath to still her trembling.
Why are you so cold to me, sir?
She asked at last.
And why did you bring me here to this cold country?
The prince looked up, and for a moment his stern face softened.
I sometimes wonder.
He slowly shook his head. Please, if you despise the company of the other court ladies, then go and have the harper sing for you. Please, I will not have an argument tonight.
Nor any night, Vosheva snapped. You do not seem to want me at all, but old things, yes, yes, those you are interested in. You and your old books.
Joshua's patience was wearing thin.
The events we will speak of tonight are old, yes, but their importance is to our current struggle. Damnation, woman, I am a prince of the realm and cannot evade my responsibilities.
You do better at that than you think, Prince Joshua,
she replied frostily, throwing her cape about her shoulders. When she reached the doorway, she turned.
I hate the way you think only of the past. Old books, old battles, old history.
Her lip curled.
Old loves.
The door swung closed behind her.
Thanks to you, Prince, for admitting us to your chambers,
Binnabik said. His round face was troubled.
I would not have been making such a request had I not thought this important.
Of course, Binnabik, the prince said. I too prefer to talk in more quiet surroundings. The troll and old Yarnaga had pulled up hard wooden stools to sit beside Joshua at his table. Father Strangyard, who had accompanied them, was walking quietly around the room, looking at the tapestries. In all his years at Naglamund, it was the first time he had been in the prince's private chambers. I'm still reeling from the things I heard last night, Joshua said, then gestured at the sheets of parchment Binnabik had strewn before him. Now you say there is even more I must know? The prince gave a small, rueful smile. God must be chastising me, taking my nightmare of having to command a castle at siege, and then complicating it with all this. Yarnaga leaned forward.
As long as you remember, Prince Joshua, that it is no nightmare we speak of, but a dark reality. We cannot any of us afford the luxury of thinking this a fantasy.
Father Strangyard and I have been at days of searching in the castle archives, Binnabik said, since first I came, trying to find the meaning of the weird of the swords.
The dream, you mean, that you told me of?
Joshua asked, idly thumbing through the pages of writing on the table. The one that you and the boy had in the witch woman's house?
And not them alone,
Yarnaga declared, his eyes sharp as chips of blue ice.
The nights before I left Tongoldir, I too dreamt of a great book. Das Fadenwild was written upon it in letters of fire.
I have heard of the priest Nisse's book, of course, the prince said, nodding. When I was a young student with the Usurian brothers. It was infamous, but it no longer exists.
Surely you are not going to tell me you have found a copy here, in our castle library.
Not for the lack of our searching, Binnebik replied. If it had been anywhere but perhaps the St. Gallen Adonitis, here it would be. Strangyard has been assembling a library of great wonder.
Very kind, the archivist said, facing the wall as though studying a tapestry so that his unseemly blush of pleasure would not imperil his reputation as a level-headed historian.
In fact, for all of Strangyard's and my hunting, it was Yarnauga who has been partway solving our problem, Binnebik continued.
The old man leaned forward and tapped a skinny finger on the parchment.
It was a stroke of good fortune, which I hope bodes well for us all. Morghenis had sent once to ask me questions about Nesez, who was, of course, a Rimmer's man like myself, to help fill in some empty spots in his written life of your father, King John. I was of little help, I'm afraid. I told him what I knew, but I remembered his asking.
And, Binnebik said excited, another stroke of luckiness. The one thing young Simon saved from the destruction of Morghenis' chambers was this book.
He grabbed a sheaf in his stubby brown hand and waved it.
The Life and Reign of King John Presbyter by Morghenis Equestres, Dr. Morghenis of Erchester. In another way still, the doctor is with us here.
We owe him more than we can say, Yarnauga pronounced solemnly. He saw the dark days coming and made many preparations, some we still do not know of.
But the most important to this current moment, the troll burst in, is this, his life of Prester John. Look!
He thrust the papers into Joshua's hand. The prince leafed through them, then looked up, smiling faintly. Reading Nisse's tangled and archaic language puts me in mind of my student days, prowling the archives of the St. Kellen Adonitis. He shook his head regretfully. This is fascinating, of course, and I pray that I have the time someday to read Morghenis' full work, but I still do not understand. He held up the page he had been reading. Here is a description of the forging of the blade, Sorrow. But I see no information that Yarnauga has not already given to us.
What help will this be?
Binnebik, with Joshua's permission, took back the manuscript.
We must be looking closer, Prince Joshua, he said. Morghenis quotes from Nisse's, and the fact that he actually read at least some of Du Svarenvied only confirms for me Morghenis' resourcefulness. He quotes Nisse's as speaking of two other great swords. Two more besides Sorrow. Here, let me read what Morghenis tells are Nisse's own words.
Binnebik cleared his throat and began.
The first great sword came in its form original from out of the sky 1,000 years agone. Osiris Aedon, whom we of Mother Church call the Son and Avatar of God, had hung for 9 days and nights, nailed by his hands and feet, to the execution tree in the square before the temple of Jovenis in Naban. This Jovenis was the heathen god of justice, and the Nabane imperator was wont to hang such diverse criminals at his courts, convicted from the mighty branches of Jovenis' tree. So hung Osiris of the Lake, guilty of sacrilege and rebellion for proclaiming the single god, heels above head like a carcass of beef. There came that ninth night a great roaring and a streak of fire, and a hurtling bolt from the heavens flew down from the sky and smote the temple into 1,000 shards, killing all the heathen judges and priests within. When the reek and fumes were dispersed, the body of Osiris Aedon was gone, and a great shout went up that God had restored him to heaven and punished his enemies, although others said that Osiris' patient disciples had cut down his body and escaped in the confusion. These naysayers were quickly made silent, and the word of a miracle spread throughout all the quarters of the city. Thus began the downfall of the pagan gods of Naban. In the smoking rubble of the temple, there now lay a great and steaming stone. It was proclaimed by the Edonites that here was the heathen altar, melted by the vengeful fires of the one god. I, Nisus, believe instead that this was a flaming star of the heavens fallen to earth, as happens on occasion. Now, from this molten rack was taken a great piece, and the Imperator's sword rights found it workable, and the sky metal was hammered into a great blade. In mind of the scourging branches which had flayed Usiri's back, the star sword, as I suppose it to be, was named Thorn, and a mighty power there was in it.
Thus, Benebik said, the sword Thorn being passed down through the line of Nabene rulers, came at last to Sir Camaris, my father's most beloved friend, Joshua finished. The stories of Camaris' sword Thorn are many, but I had not known before today where it came from, if Nisus is to be believed. This passage has somewhat the smack of heresy.
Those of his assertions, which can be measured against truth, measure well, your highness,
Yarnauga said, stroking his beard.
Still, said Joshua, what does it mean? Camaris' sword was lost when he drowned.
Allow me to share more of Nisus' writings, Benebik replied, here, where he is speaking of the third part of our puzzle. The second of the great swords came from the sea, traveling across the salt ocean from the west to Austin Earth. For some years, the sea raiders had come seasonally to this land from the far, cold country they called Isgard, only to return across the waves when their pillaging was done. Then it was, some tragedy or dire happening in their native place caused the men of Isgard to abandon that land and bring their families in boats to Austin Ard, to settle in Rimmersgard in the north, the land of my own far more recent birth. When they had landed, their king Elfrid gave thanks to Odin and their other heathenish gods and commanded that the iron keel of his dragon boat should be made into a sword to protect his people in their new land. Thus it went that the keel was given to the Dvernings, a secretive and crafty race, and they separated out the pure and significant metal by means unknown, and smithed a long and shining blade. But in the haggling over the payment, King Elfrid and the master of the Dvernings fell out, and the king did slay the smith, and took the sword unpaid for, which was the cause of much later woe. In thought of their coming to this new country, Elfrid named the sword Mineyar, which means Year of Memory.
The troll finished and walked to the table to drink from the water you were there.
So, Benebik of Yikanok, two powerful swords, Joshua said. Perhaps this dreadful year has softened my mind, but I cannot think what significance they have to us.
Three swords, Yarnauga offered, counting in the look is Jingizu, what we call sorrow. Three great swords. You must read this last part of Nisse's book that Morgaini cited, Prince Joshua,
Strangyard said, joining them at last. He picked up the parchment that Benebik had laid on the table.
Here, please, this bit of rhyme from the end of the Matman's writings.
When frosteth grow on Clave's bell, Joshua read aloud, and shadows walk upon the road, when water blackens in the well, three swords must come again. When Buchan from the earth do creep, and Hunin from the heights descend, when nightmare throttles peaceful sleep, three swords must come again. To turn the stride of treading fate, to clear the fogging mists of time. If early shall resist too late, three swords must come again. I think I understand, the prince said with mounting interest. This almost appears to be a prophecy of our own day, as if Nisse somehow knew that Inaluke would someday return.
Yes, Yanaga said, combing his beard with his fingers as he looked over Joshua's shoulder. And apparently, if things are to be made right, three swords must come again.
Our understanding, prince, Benebik said, is that if somehow the Storm King can be defeated, it is by our finding the three swords.
The three swords of which Nisse speaks? Joshua asked.
So it would seem.
But if what the boy Simon saw is correct, sorrow is already in the hands of my brother. The prince frowned, his pale brow creased with the lines of thought. If it were a simple thing to go and take it from him in the Hayholt, we would not be cowering here in Naglamund.
We shall worry about sorrow last, prince, Yanaga said. We must move now to secure the other two. I am named for my eyes and my trained sight, but even I cannot see the future. Perhaps a way will come for us to take sorrow from Elias. Or perhaps he will make some mistake. No, it is Thorn and Minnea we must now find.
Joshua leaned back in his chair, crossing one ankle over the other and pressing his fingers on his lidded eyes. This is like a children's story, he exclaimed. How are mere men to survive such times? Chill winter in Juvenmonth? The risen Storm King who is a dead Scythi prince? And now a desperate search for long-forgotten swords. Madness! Folly! He opened his eyes and sat up. But what can we do? I believe it all. So I must be mad too. The prince stood up and began to pace. The others watched him, grateful that despite the slenderness of their hope, they had at least convinced Joshua of the grim, strange truth. Father Strangyard, he said at last, would you go and find Duke Iskrimnor? I sent my pages and all others away so we would have privacy.
Certainly,
the archivist said, and hurried from the room, robes flapping on his lanky frame. No matter what happens, Joshua said, I will have much to explain at tonight's raid. I would have Iskrimnor beside me. The barons know him as a practical man, for I am still somewhat suspect for my years in Naban and my odd ways. The prince smiled wearily. If these mad things are true, then our task is more complex than even it was. If the Duke of Elritz Harlow will stand beside me, then I think the barons will too. Although I do not think I will share this latest bit of information, even if it does represent a thin shard of hope. I mistrust the ability of some of the lords to keep such amazing things a secret. The prince sighed. It was bad enough to have Elias alone for an enemy. He stood staring at the blazing hearth. His eyes glinted, as if full of some reflecting moisture. My poor brother. Benevik looked up, startled by the prince's tone. My poor brother, Joshua said again. He must be riding the nightmare now in earnest. The Storm King, the White Foxes. I cannot think he knew what he was doing.
Somebody had knowledge of what they did, Prince, the troll declared. Stormspike's master and his minions do not, I am thinking, go dancing house to house like peddlers, a selling of their wares.
Oh, I doubt not that Priorates reached out to them somehow, Joshua said. I know him and his unholy thirst for forbidden knowledge from the old days, in the seminary of the Osirian brothers. He shook his head sorrowfully. But Elias, although brave as a bear, was always mistrustful of secrets in old books and scornful of scholarship. He also feared talk of spirits or the demonic. He became worse after his wife died. I wonder what he thought worth the terror he must reap for this bargain.
I wonder if he now regrets it. What terrible allies. Poor, foolish Elias. It was raining again, and when Strangyard came back with the Duke, they were both soaked from their trip across the long courtyard. Iskrimnor stood in the doorway of Joshua's chambers, stamping like a nervous horse.
"I was just seeing to my wife," he explained. "She and the other women left ahead of Skarli's arrival and went to Thane Tonrud, her uncle. She has brought half a dozen of my men and a score of women and children. She's got the frostbite in her fingers, poor Gudrun.
I'm sorry to call you away from her, Iskrimnor, especially if she is injured," the prince apologized, rising and clasping the old duke's hand.
"Ah, there's not much I can do. She has our girls to help her."
He frowned, but there was pride in his voice.
"She's a strong woman. She made strong sons for me.
And we shall bring help to Isorn, your eldest, never fear."
Joshua led Iskrimnor to the table and handed him Morgaini's manuscript. "It may be, though, that we shall be fighting more than one battle." When the Duke had read of the weird of the swords and asked some few questions, he read the pages again.
"This bit of rhyme, then?" he asked at last. "You think that's the key to the whole thing?" "If you mean the sort of key that locks a door," Yarnauga said. "Yes, we hope so, for that is what we must do, it seems. Find the swords of Nisse's prophecy, swords that will keep the Storm King at bay. But your boy claimed Elias has the Scythe one, and in fact I saw him wearing an unfamiliar sword when he told me I could leave for Elvrit's Hala. A great, strange-looking thing it was."
"This we know, Duke," Benedict chimed. "It is the other two we must first find."
Iskrimnor squinted suspiciously at the troll.
"And what do you want from me, little man?"
"Only your help, in any way you can render it," Joshua said, reaching out to pat the Rimmersman's shoulder. "And Benedict of Yikanuk is here for the same reasons."
"Have you heard aught of the fate of Minayor, Elvrit's sword?" Yarnauga asked. "I confess I should know, since it is the purpose of our league to gather such wisdom. But Minayor has gone out of the tales we know." "I know this from my grandmother, who was a storyteller," Iskrimnor said, chewing his mustache as he remembered. "It went through Elvrit's line to Fingal Redhand, and from Fingal to his son Hjeldin. And then when Hjeldin fell from the tower, with Nisse's dead on the floor behind him, Hjeldin's lieutenant Ikferdig took it along with Fingal's crown of the Rimmersmen and the mastery of the Hayholt."
"Ikferdig died in the Hayholt?"
Strangyard said shyly, warming his hands at the hearth.
"The Burned King, he is called in my books."
"Dead by the dragon fire of Red Shurike," Yarnauga said. "Roasted in his throne room, like a corny."
"So,"
Benedict said thoughtfully, while gentle Strangyard shivered at Yarnauga's words,
"Minayor is either within the walls of the Hayholt somewhere, or it has been unmade by the red dragon's fiery breathing."
Joshua stood up and walked to the fireplace, where he stood staring into the wavering flames. Strangyard inched away so as not to crowd his prince.
"Two confounding and unhappy alternatives," Joshua said, and grimaced, turning to Father Strangyard.
"You have brought me no good news today, you wise men." At this, the archivist looked morose.
"First you tell me our only hope is to find this trio of legendary blades, and now you say that two of them are in the stronghold of my enemy brother, if they exist at all."
The prince sighed in dismay. "What of the third? Does Priorates use it to cut his beef at table?"
"Thorn,"
Benedict said, climbing up to perch on the table's edge.
"The sword of the great knight, who was Camaris.
made from the Star Stone, which destroyed the Temple of Uvenis in Old Naben,
Yanaga said.
But surely it went into the sea with great Camaris, when he was swept overboard in the Bay of Phyranus.
You see, spat Joshua, two held by my brother and the third in the even tighter grip of the jealous ocean. We are cursed before we begin.
It no doubt would have also seemed an impossible chance that Morgaini's work would have survived the destruction of him and his chambers, Yanaga said, and his voice was stern. And then would come safely through danger and despair to us here, so we could read Nisse's prophecy. But it did survive, and it did reach us. There is always hope.
Excuse me, Prince, but there seems only one thing to do,
Binevik said, nodding sagely atop the table.
It is back to the archives and searching again, until we find the answer to the riddle of Thorn and the other blades. And we must be finding it soon.
Soon indeed, said Yanaga, for we are wasting diamond precious time.
By all means, said Joshua, pulling his chair over by the hearth and slumping down into it, by all means make haste. But I deeply fear that our time has already run out.
Damn and damn and damn, Simon said, hurling yet one more rock from the battlement into the teeth of the wind.
Naglimund seemed to stand in a great expanse of soapy grey nothingness, a mountain sprouting from a sea of swirling rain.
Damn,
he added, as he bent to search for another on the wet stone wall. Sankfugl looked over, his fine cap a limp, sodden mass on his head.
Simon, he said crossly, you cannot have it both ways. First you curse them all for dragging you along behind them, like a peddler's sack. Then you blaspheme and hurl stones because you are not invited to the afternoon's deliberations.
I know, Simon said, sending another projectile down from the castle walls.
I don't know what I want. I don't know anything.
The harper scowled. What I would like to know is, what are we doing up here? Are there not better places to feel miserable and left out? It is cold as a well-digger's privy parts on these battlements. He allowed his teeth to chatter for a moment, hoping to inspire pity.
Why are we up here? Because it clears a man's head. A little wind and rain,
Towser called, making his way back along the battlement toward his two companions.
There is no better cure for a night of drinking.
The little old man winked at Simon, who guessed that Towser would have gone down long ago, but for the enjoyable sight of Sankfugl, shivering in his beautiful grey velvet robe.
Well, the harper growled, miserable as a soaked cat, you drink like a man in his youth, Towser, or in his second childhood. Thus, I suppose it is no surprise to see you prance on the walls for fun, just like a rascally boy.
Ah, Sankfugl,
Towser said with a wrinkly smile, watching another of Simon's missiles send up a gout of water from the rain-pocked pond that eddied where the commons yard had been.
You are too.
Oh, Towser pointed. Is that not Dukas Grimnor? I had heard he was returned.
Oh, Duke!
The jester shouted and waved at the stout figure. Isgrimnor, squinting against the slanting raindrops, looked up.
Duke Isgrimnor, it's Towser!
Is that who it is? The duke cried. Damn me, it is, you old horson.
Come up, Towser said. Come and tell me what is the news.
I shouldn't be amazed, Sankfugl said sardonically, as the duke ankled across the submerged commons toward the curling staircase in the wall. The only person beside an old madman who would come up of his free will would be a Rimmersman. It's probably even too warm for him, since it's not actually sleeting or snowing. Isgrimnor had a tired smile and a nod for Simon and the harper, then turned and clasped the jester's veined hand and gave him a comradely smack on the shoulder. He was so much taller and bulkier than Towser that he looked like a mother bear cuffing her cub. While the Duke and the jester exchanged tidings, Simon threw stones and listened, and Sankfugl stood with a look of patient, hopeless suffering. Soon, unsurprisingly, the Rimmersmen's talk came around from mutual friends and homely things to darker topics. As Isgrimnor spoke of the gathering threat of war and the shadow in the north, Simon felt the cold that the chill winds had strangely helped dispel for a while come shouldering back. When the Duke began to speak in hushed tones of the ruler of the north, then sheered off, saying some things were too fear-fraught to speak of openly, the cold seemed to slide further into Simon's being. He stared out into the murky distance, at the dark fist of storm that hovered beyond the rain on the northern horizon, and felt himself slipping back into his journey on the dream road.
The naked thrust of the stone mountain, its halo of indigo and yellow flames, the silver-masked queen in her icy throne, and the chanting voices in the rocky fastness.
Black thoughts pressed down on him, crushing him like the rim of a broad wheel. It would be easy, he was sure, to go forward into the darkness, into the warmth beyond the storm's chill.
It's so close, so close.
Simon, a voice said in his ear. A hand grasped his elbow. He looked down, startled, to see the edge of the battlement inches from his foot, and the wind-lashed water of the courtyard directly below.
What are you doing?
Sankfugl asked, giving his arm a shake.
If you went over this little wall, you would have more than broken bones.
I was,
Simon said, feeling a dark mist still clouding his thoughts, a mist that was slow to clear.
Thorn?
Towser said loudly, responding to something Isgrimnor had said. Simon turned to see the little jester tugging at the Rimmersman's cloak like an importunate child.
Thorn, did you say? Well then why did you not come to me immediately? Why not come to old Towser? I know all there is to know, if anybody does.
The old man turned to Simon and the harper.
Why, who was with our John longer than anyone? Oh, I was, of course. Joked and tumbled and played for him 60 years. And the great Camaris, too. I saw him come to the court.
He turned back around to face the Duke, and there was a light in his eyes that Simon had not seen before.
I am the man you want,
Towser said proudly.
Quick, take me to Prince Joshua.
The bandy-legged old jester almost seemed to dance, so light were his steps, as he led the somewhat dumbfounded Rimmersman toward the stairs.
Thank God and his angels, said Sankfugl, watching them go.
I suggest we go immediately to pour something inside us.
A wetness within to make up for the wetness without.
He led Simon, who was still shaking his head, down from the rainy battlements into the echoing torchlit stairwell, out of the northern winds for a little while, and into the warmth.
We understand your place in these events, good Towser, Joshua said impatiently.
The prince, perhaps to ward off the all-pervasive chill, had wrapped a woolen scarf tightly around his throat. The tip of his slender nose was pink.
I'm just setting the place, so to speak, your highness,
Towser said complacently.
If I might have a cup of wine to help ease the talk, I will get to the main course directly.
Isgrimnor, Joshua groaned. Would you be good enough to find our venerable jester something to drink? Or I fear we shall be here until Aidentide waiting for the rest of the story.
The Duke of Elfrid's Harla went to the cedar cabinet beside Joshua's table and found a ewer of red Padruin wine.
Here,
he said, handing a filled flagon to Towser, who sipped and smiled.
It's not the wine he's wanting, the Rimmersman thought. It's the attention. These are grim enough days for the young and useful, let alone for an old trickster whose master is 2 years dead.
He stared at the jester's seamed face, and for a moment thought he saw the child's countenance trapped beneath, as behind a thin curtain.
God grant me a quick, honorable death, Isgrimnor prayed, and never let me be one of those old fools who sits by the campfire, telling the young men that things will never be as good as they once were. Still, he thought,
as he moved back to his chair, listening to the lupine howling of the winds outside.
Still, it may be true this time. Maybe we have seen the better days. Maybe there is nothing left now but a losing battle against creeping darkness.
You see, Towser was saying, Kamara's sword Thorn didn't go with him into the ocean. He had given it over for safekeeping to his squire, Colmund of Rodstanby. Gave away his sword? Joshua said, puzzled.
That accords with none of the stories I have ever heard of Kamara Sorvenita.
Ah, but you did not know him that last year, and how could you, since you had only just come into the world?
Towser took another swig and stared meditatively up at the ceiling.
Sir Kamaris grew strange and fell after your mother, Queen Ebeka, died. He was her special protector, you know, and he worshipped the very tile she trod upon, as if she were Elysia, the mother of God herself. I always thought he blamed himself for her death, as though he could somehow have cured her ill health by force of arms, or by the purity of his heart. Poor idiot.
Seeing Joshua's impatience, Isgrimnor leaned forward.
So he gave the star sword Thorn to his squire?
Yes, yes,
said the old man testily, not liking to be rushed.
When Kamaris was lost in the sea off Harcha Island, Colman took it for his own. He went back and reclaimed his family's lands at Rodstanby in the Frost March, and became the baron of a good-sized province. Thorn was a famous weapon through all the world, and when his enemies saw it, for it was unmistakable, all shiny black, but for the silver hilt, a beautiful, perilous thing, they would none of them face him. He seldom even had to draw it from its scabbard. So it is then at Rodstanby,
Benebik said excitedly from the corner.
That is near within 2 days' ride from where we are now sitting.
No, no, no,
growled Towser, waving his flagon for Isgrimnor to fill again.
If you would only wait, Troll, I will tell you all.
Before Binnebik or the prince or anyone else could respond, Yarnaga stood up from his crouch by the fire and leaned toward the little jester.
Towser, he said, and his voice was as hard and cold as ice in the roof thatches. We cannot wait on your pace. There is a grave darkness spreading from the north, a cold and fatal shadow. We must have the sword. Do you understand?
He brought his sharp face even closer to Towser's, and the little man's tufted eyebrows shot upward in alarm.
We must find Thorn, for soon the Storm King himself will be knocking at our door. Do you understand?
Towser gaped as Yarnauga dropped back into his long-limbed squat beside the hearth.
Well, Isgrimnor mused, if we wanted the latest news shouted all over Neglamund, now we'll have it done. Still, it does look as though he's put a bit of a burr under Towser's saddle.
It took a few moments for the jester to be able to tear his startled, fascinated eyes from the glare-eyed northerner. When he turned, he no longer looked to be enjoying his status quite as much.
Colmund, he began. Sir Colmund heard travelers' tales of the dragon Yggdrasil's legendary hoard in the heights of the mountain Irmsheim. It was a treasure said to be richer than any other in the wide world. Only a Flatlander would be thinking of searching out a mountain dragon, and for gold, Binnebik said disgustedly. My people have long lived near Irmsheim, and we are living long because we are not going there. But you see, old Towser said, the dragon has been only a story for generations. No one has seen it, no one has heard of it, except for snow-maddened wanderers, and Colmund had the sword Thorn, a magic sword, to lead him on a quest for the magic dragon's hoard.
But what idiocy, Joshua said. Did he not have everything he wanted? A powerful barony,
the sword of a hero. Why should he go rabbiting off after such a madman's vision?
Damn me, Joshua, Iskrimnor swore. Why do men do any of the things they do? Why did they hang our Lord Osiris topsides down from the tree? Why should Elias imprison his brother and make bargains with demons when he is already High King of all Osten-Ard?
There are indeed things in men and women that make them reach for what is beyond their grasp,
Yanaga said from his hearth corner.
Sometimes the things they seek lie beyond the bounds of understanding.
Benedict jumped lightly to the floor.
"So much talk is this of things we can never know," he said. "Our question still is, where is the sword? Where is Thorn?"
"Lost in the north, I'm sure," Tausa said. "I have never heard that Sir Calman came back from his quest. One traveller's tale was that he had made himself a king of the Hunin, and lives there still, in a fortress of ice."
It sounds as though his story has been muddied and mixed with old memories of Ineluki,
Yanauga said thoughtfully.
He made it as far as the monastery of St. Skendi at Vesvenby.
Father Strangyard piped up unexpectedly from the back of the room. He had gone out quickly and come back without anyone's noticing. He wore a faint flush of pleasure high on his thin cheeks.
Towser's words sparked a memory. I thought I had some of the monastic books of Skendi's order salvaged from its burning during the Frostmarch Wars. Here is the household ledger for the founding year, 1131. See, it lists the outfitting of Colman's party.
He passed it proudly to Joshua, who held it up to the firelight.
Dried meat and fruits, Joshua read, straining to make out the faded words.
Wool cloaks. 2 horses,
he looked up. It says here a party of 12, 13. He passed the book on to Binnevik, who took it back to pore over with Yarnauga by the fire.
Then they must have run into bad luck, Tausa said, refilling his flagon. The stories I heard said he set out from Rod Stanby with over 24 of his hand-picked best.
Iskrimnor was staring after the troll.
He's certainly clever enough, the Rimmersman thought, although I don't trust him or his kind much. And what's his hold on that boy? I'm not sure I like that either. Although I think the stories they both tell are largely true.
What good is all this to us now? He said aloud. If the sword is lost, it is lost, and we must simply make the best of our defenses here.
Joke is grim, no, Benedict said. You are not understanding, perhaps. There is no choice for us. If indeed the Storm King is our greater enemy, as I think we are all agreeing now, then the only thing for hope, it seems, is that we acquire the 3 swords. 2 are for now denied from us. That leaves Thorn, and we must find it, if finding is possible.
Don't instruct me, little man, Iskrimnor growled.
But Joshua waved his hand wearily to forestall their argument.
Quiet now, the prince said. Please let me think. My brain is fevered with so many madnesses heaped one atop the other. I need some moments of quiet.
Strangyard, Yarnauga and Binnevik pored over the monastery ledger and Morgaini's manuscript, talking in whispers. Towser finished his wine. Iskrimnor sipping moodily beside him. Joshua sat staring into the fire. The prince's weary features looked like parchment pulled over bone. The Duke of Elvritzhalla could hardly bear to look at him.
His father looked no worse in his last dying days, Iskrimnor brooded. Has he the strength to lead us through a siege, as it looks to come to soon? Has he even the strength himself to survive? He has ever been a thinker, a warrior. Although, in fairness, he is no slouch with sword and shield.
Without thinking, he got up and stumped over to the prince's side, laying an ursine paw on Joshua's shoulder. The prince looked up.
Can you spare me a good man, old friend? Do you have one who knows the northeast country?
Iskrimnor looked thoughtful.
I have two or three. Freka, though, is too old for a journey such as I imagine you are thinking of. Einskerdir would not leave my side unless I pushed him out of the gate of Naglamund at Spear Point. Besides, I have a mind we will need his fierceness here, when the fighting grows hot and bloody. He is a badger, fierce-blooded, and best when he is backed into a hole.
The Duke mused.
Of the rest, I would give you Sludic. He is young and fit, but he is also clever. Yes, Sludic will be the man for you.
Good.
Joshua nodded his head slowly.
I have some three or four I will send, but a small party is better than a large.
For what exactly?
Iskrimnor looked around the room, at its sparse solidity, and wondered again whether they were chasing phantoms, whether the wintry weather had somehow chilled their better judgment.
To search for Kamara's sword, Uncle Bearskin, the prince said with a ghost of a smile.
It is doubtless madness, and we have nothing better to go on than old stories and a few faded words in old books. But it is not a chance we can afford to ignore. It is storm-fraught winter in the summer month of Yuven. None of our doubts can change that.
He looked around the room, mouth pursed in thought.
Binnebik of Yikanuk, he called at last,
and the troll hurried over.
Will you lead a party on the Trail of Thorn? You know the northern mountains better than anyone here,
except perhaps Yarnauga, who I hope will go too.
I would be full of honor, prince,
Binnebik said, and dropped to one knee. Even as Grimnor was forced to grin.
I am honored too, Prince Joshua, Yanaga said, rising. But I think it is not to be. Here at Naglamund I will best serve. My legs are old, but my eyes are still keen. I will help Strangyard in the archives, for there are many questions still to answer, many riddles behind the story of the Storm King, and the whereabouts of Fingersword Minniar, and there may yet be other ways I can serve as well.
Your Highness, Binnebik asked, if there is a place unfilled, may I have your permission to take young Simon? Morghenis was asking, as his last wish, that the boy be watched over by my master. With Uke Cook's death, I am master now, and would not be shirking this watching over.
Joshua looked skeptical.
And you would look after him by taking him on a mad expedition into the unmapped north?
Binnebik raised an eyebrow.
Unmapped by big people, perhaps. It is the commons yard of my Cannock folk. Also, is it more safe to leave him shut up in a castle set for warring with the High King?
The prince brought his long hand up to his face as though his head pained him. You are right, I suppose. If these slender threads of hope come to naught, there will be no safe places for those who have sided with the Lord of Naglamund. If the boy wishes to go, you may take him. He brought his hand down and clasped Binnebik's shoulder.
Very well, little man, little but brave. Go back to your books, and I shall send you three good Erkinlanders and Iskrimnor's man Sludic in the morning.
My thanks, Prince Joshua,
Binnebik nodded.
But I think it is at night tomorrow we should be leaving. We will be a small party, and our best hope is it not attracting evil attention?
So be it, said Joshua, rising and lifting his hand as though in benediction.
Who knows if this is some fool's errand or the rescue of us all? You should be going out amid trumpets and applause.
Instead, necessity must override honor, and stealth must be the watchword.
Know that our thoughts are with you.
Iskrimnor hesitated, then leaned forward and clasped Binnebik's small hand.
"Damn strange this is," he said, But God be with you. If Sludig should get contentious, be forgiving. He is high-spirited, but his heart is good, and his loyalty strong.
Thank you, Joke, the troll said seriously. May your God be blessing us indeed. We go into unknown places.
As do all mortals, Joshua added, sooner or later.
What? You told the prince and everyone I would go where?
Simon balled his fists in anger.
What right did you have to do that?
Simon, friend,
Binnebik calmly responded.
You are under no order to go. I was only asking Joshua's permission for your being on this search, and it was granted. The choosing is for you.
Splutty tree, what else can I do now? If I say no, everyone will think I'm a coward.
Simon.
The little man put on a look of patience.
First, please do not be using your new learned soldier curses on me. We Canuck are a courteous folk. For second, it is not good worrying so on others' opinions. Anyway, staying at Naglamund will certainly not be for cowards.
Simon hissed a great frosty cloud of breath and hugged himself. He stared up at the murky sky, at the dull blur of sun secreted behind the clouds.
Why are people always making decisions for me without asking first? Am I a child?
He stood for some moments, red-faced from more than the chill, until Binnebik reached out a small, gentle hand.
My friend, I am sorrowful. This was not the honor I was hoping it to be. An honor of dreadful, dreadful danger, of course, but an honor. I have explained of what importance